culture meets high technology at the bleeding edge of the radical right. Majority Rights Radio.
And we have liftoff, or first light, if you will, first audio. This is Majority Rights Radio. I'm Soren Renner, your host, and I am speaking to guest worker. And if I'm the host, guest worker, I wonder what that makes you.
Well, on this occasion, you are entirely the host. The radio is your idea, and I am very grateful for the suggestion. I think it'll work out fine. I don't envy you the job that you've got. You're happy with it.
Oh, it's all an act.
Well, okay, we'll see. I know. Well, okay, fine. But the bottom line is that with this sort of thing, it's a leap into nothing, and we've got absolutely nothing to lose from it. I think it'll be fine. I think we'll get some very good people involved. I think we've got a very good person coming on next week. And our listeners, first time I've used that word, how strange, should be able to augment the
information. Since you brought it up,
search.
Why don't we talk about the next guest? It won't be precisely next week. It'll be in about 10 or 12 days. But,
no, right, okay.
Next week, I'll be speaking... Next show, I will be speaking to Tomislav Sunic, who is a Croatian scholar, and you know him much better than I do.
Yes. Yes, yes. Tom's a near friend, I guess you'd say. I wouldn't want to overdo it. I think a lot of people claim friendships with people like Tom, and it's not always appropriate to do that. He's a very fine man, amongst other things, and somebody I greatly respect. I've met him, and he's been to my house, and I regard him as being somebody who's quite a long way ahead of the game, really, especially as white nationalism is concerned, and the things that he has to say are important. They are things that won't necessarily be easy to take in some instances, and for that reason alone, if you listen to Tom, you know you're going to be hearing something.
Let's just
new.
Leave it for He's leave an it original there for thing. Now. Let's talk about you and your issues, and let's go back in time, if you will, if you can cast your mind back, close your eyes, relax, and remember what it was like to be a young guest worker.
Okay.
Growing up, I'm getting a picture of like EastEnders. I'm not really sure if you lived there, but you're
not
down
exactly
in the pubs
EastEnders.
As
no.
a young man, say
I
in 1970,
I was brought up in.
You were 19.
Well,
life lay ahead of you.
Okay, let's go back a little bit before that. I mean, I was born in an era when things were very different. The kind of
right.
political culture that we have today did not exist. There were some you're a great one for Malthusianism and that sort of thing, but I mean there were issues after the war about just basically getting the provisions one required in order to be able to get by day. They didn't exist, especially in Britain. And the 1950s, certainly the beginning of the 1950s when I was born,
yes,
was very austere. And by and large, it was a good time to be born in retrospect, because although we didn't know it at the time, and I remember as a kid I used to sort of sit around looking outside at the rainy world and thinking, well, it's pretty grey, wasn't very exciting. Nonetheless, looking back, it was something of a golden age from our perspective now, and that age, whilst it's not right, obviously, to build these things up into something they were not, that age had certain highly significant advantages which children born today do not have, and in a way, and although it's easy to criticise, it's easy to run down people who say this kind of thing, but in a way, we're seeking to get back to some of the principles which were thought entirely natural in the 1950s, and which
you come from the world of George Orwell and Edith Nesbit and C.S. Lewis,
Yeah. I do. I think that I'm the last generation that came from that world. I think that those who were born... Philip Larkin said sex was invented
Sexual intercourse began in 1963.
Too late for me, or something of that sort. Okay, that's it. You are a much better literary expert than myself. I will readily bend the knee to you, Saren. But the bottom line is that once you got into the 60s, swinging London and this sort of thing, life had a completely different flavour. And the principal kinds of desires that existed in the youth coming through from the 1970s and onward were very different. I mean, if you look at punk rock and that sort of thing, you're seeing a completely different kind of cultural exhibition. And I think that by that time we'd well and truly lost our way. This is a major question. This isn't about immigration. It's not even about the political left. This is a major issue of the global cultural change and its effect on that part of us as human beings, which we acquire in life. People obviously take something from their genes, and they take some things that are permanent and belong entirely to their specific cultural types. But there's also a good deal
of plasticity. All right. So, in three sentences, and, if you could bring us from 1970 to say the mid 90s.
In three sentences. Well, sentence number one: by the time I was in my mid 20s, I'd become aware that the demographic change in this country was proceeding
okay,
at a phenomenal
stop.
Pace, and that it was dangerous.
No, that just period. That's one sentence. I'm
okay.
Cutting you up.
That was only one sentence. That was only one sentence. Well, sentence number two. What can I say? By the time I was getting on for 40, I was looking for political solutions, maybe a bit younger than that, 35, 40, had at that point decided that this was something to do with the
brilliant,
left
brilliant.
Right
stop.
Environment.
Sentence number three.
Politics.
And this has to get you into the mid-90s.
All right. And I guess by the time, at the end of the 90s and beginning of the 21st century, I had begun to understand metapolitics for the first time, and I'd begun to find... an area of struggle on the internet that was opening
stop.
Up for me.
Good. That's
an area
that's
of education.
Brilliant. So
and that,
this is interesting.
That's it.
You're telling me that you didn't actually come into your own politically until you were well over 40.
Oh, I think you have to view at what point in life.
You would define that.
Do you mean in a racial sense? I wouldn't agree with it. But in terms of finding a sniffing out useful things, then you know that was impossible to do before
well,
the
that,
arrival
that's
of the
interesting.
Internet. The information wasn't
this
available.
This interests me, and I'll tell you
unless
why.
You weren't looking
because
for
it. I had been operating under the assumption, I just sort of took it that people's political activism generally started young, and I thought that I was an exception because I had come to it recently. That I had come to the. I always thought of myself as vaguely on the left, and I didn't realize I was part of the racialist right until.
I disagree with you with this idea that this political activism. I think it's much deeper than that.
Right.
I think that people who have a question in them. They might go into some kind of spiritual pursuit, I don't know, but if they have this question inside them, that's the beginning. If you look at the world and you look at your life and you start to say, well, is this it? And you begin to quest, you begin to thirst for some kind of
and for you,
answer
and
to
for
the
you,
things that are troubling
the answer
you.
Was
this takes a long time
blog.
To
look. to found a bloc?
The answer initially was not even political, but it's finished up in the last couple of years as founding a bloc. A little bit before that, I started to use the political blogs that were opening up
places like Samizdata, Red State.
Places like I got banned from Samizdata, Harris Place was another one. There are all sorts of ones that I got involved in. And had a damn good
Aren't
go
Aren't those at, places crawling with filthy Marxists and libertarians and other undesirables?
Yeah, well, they're all
working.
There's people like me. Who
they're all dangling on the same outcasts. Strings, aren't they?
No,
that's not what I meant. I meant
not yet,
like marionettes.
Yeah, well, yes, but again, you know, you've got to take this right back to culture. Not, I mean, it doesn't matter what their politics are. The point is that people come into life with or without a question, and those that don't have a question still develop political opinions, very trenchant political opinions. They have political careers, but they don't have this essential question: what is this for?
What's this all
in
aid of? What's
in
aid of?
Is this in my interest? Yeah, they have to know, and if you don't have to know, then you know you can call yourself a libertarian or anything else, and go along. These other mad guys are like monks who are running around trying to answer all these great questions. You just don't need to concern yourself with them. They're mad. They're crazy. You can quite happily defame them, and if you go on to Samizdata and say a few choice things and then get yourself banned, you will find in fact that there's a panel that comes up when you revisit. I know it because I've done it, and it says in case you're a Looney Tune or some other nut, we're going to check you out.
Yes, I
that's the panel that
I never understood the attraction of getting onto a board and, you know, scrapping with people whose politics don't agree with yours. But however, wait.
No.
However,
Matt Nunke
said that was a valuable part of his sort of induction of himself into useful writing and action, was learning how to argue on boards. Sviatoslav is heavily into that. And I know that a lot of people are. It's just I don't find it something that I'm attracted to myself. But you were doing it.
I do very little of it now. I do a little bit of it. I think that there's a certainly we perceive there to be a audience out there who might have the beginnings of doubt, and this is a kind of evangelistic instinct, isn't it? Whether or not one is really making any impact, I don't know. But it served my purposes at the time, and it gave me a period during which I could assess what options are available to me. Because I'm not an intellectual, and I don't pretend to be. I'm not an academic. I'm an ordinary guy. I'm a man of action, really. And I'd be much happier doing something fairly concrete. But I happen to have been born with a facility for words to some degree.
Well, you're
not very great. And writing is something that I can do. So that's my form of action. And I just need to find
that. You're among peers here. I'm in no way an intellectual myself, guest worker. Shh.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Don't lie. Yes, you are. I know perfectly well you are. You can't keep it yourself.
Oh, but we weren't supposed to let that slip.
I know you're highly intelligent.
Oh, okay. So
no, I'm sorry about it. I'm very fortunate because around me, really, I've got some people who are wonderfully intelligent and capable, and they've attracted a commentariat to MR that I think is generally recognized as being of a very, very high quality. And anybody who's listening to this and who's a regular on the boards, this is an occasion.
In large part, this show. In large part, this show is for the people, not just who write for Majority Rights, but the people who comment there, and just the people who read. So,
yeah.
Now, we hadn't planned on doing this, but why don't we just do a shout-out? Why don't we just talk about a dozen or so of the names from the board? And because they'll be, if they're listening, GW, they'll be pleased to they'll be pleased to hear it.
I tell you what puzzles me. The ones that come participate for maybe a year or more, become good friends, really, in a way, and then suddenly one day disappear. And you look at them and think, well, what happened to that guy?
Don't you remember the Oscar Wilde story about the selfish giant? You remember it? Selfish giant had a friend, the Cornish ogre, and one of them went to the other one's house, and he stayed for 7 years. But after 7 years, they ran out of stuff to talk about, so the ogre went home. I mean, even a conversation between friends ends when people sort of run out of stuff to say. That's not surprising. But why don't we mention some people by name so that if they're listening, they can be self-satisfied. How about this Australian woman?
Okay. Melba Peachtoast.
Oh, she's a complete
mystery. Well, you probably know more about her than me. I always had the feeling that actually she was some kind of drag artist, because I would read a voice in my ears, you know, whenever I looked at her. Do you think she really raises wallabies in the outback, or do you think that's... I heard, no doubt about it in my mind. She's definitely a wallaby raiser. About the only thing she'd be able to raise, I believe. But she looks to me like a bit of a Barry Humphries character, and I'm a great fan of Barry Humphries, and that's no bother. But who she might really be, who can say? One of these days, I will resolve the issue by troubling myself to go and look at the IP number. And,
okay, how about...
we might find out.
Well, he's not only a commenter, but he's one of our posters, Sviatoslav.
Well, Svi has been very useful. Svi came quite early on from American WN, and I remember at the very beginning was amazed to find that he could come on this apparently political, ordinary political place and say what he thought and didn't get banned. And I remember him actually commenting to that effect, "I have found I can say what I like and nobody stops me," sort of thing. And that's pretty well true. People can come and say what they like. We try to be open, because what's the worth, after all, in doing the opposite and shutting everything down all the time? You have to, of course, keep out the people who are malign. But Svi has got a good heart and a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge, and I've found that although he strays as far towards the harder edge of WN sometimes as anybody at the blog, he's really central.
Now, how about this Jay Richards, who I don't have a very good sense of?
JR, well, I don't have a great sense of JR because he's a very private individual. He's reasonably brilliant as well in what he does. He creates a lot of activity on his threads. I mean, fantastic. We're talking about 800 comments in some instances, which is far too long. And if I had a thread that went much beyond 300, I think I'd probably shut it down. But this is what they do on quite a lot of blogs. They just close it down beyond a certain point. He's a seeker of truth, and he obviously doesn't want to do that. He's also very important to the blog because he manages to fill in all of the technical spaces which are above my head, which he's well aware. He's done a tremendous job on the rebuild that we did a few months ago and relaunch, and he's been absolutely invaluable to me in that respect, and I'm very, very grateful, which I believe he should know. His entries, I would love to see him actually extend a little bit beyond this quite narrow area that he's involved in, and participate on a wider political basis. But this is entirely this is a free blog, and people come and they do as they will. I have been blamed down the months of last year, all last year, of course, with the JJR thing, for being too eclectic, and that's something which I'll plead guilty to. I am too eclectic, probably, but it's how I wanted the blog to be. I wanted us to try to reach as wider area as possible, and to produce as much interesting stuff as possible that may not be of immediate interest.
Now, let's talk about a poster on the blog who has... I think he has been... I mean, he's been terribly valuable to me, personally. Matt Nunke. He does these scientifically well-informed reviews, posts, you know, race realism, you know. He knows the IQ stuff, the genetics.
Well, Matt
he has his own site at neoeugenics.com. Yeah, of course.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
Yes, and you know him
yes.
well. And you've met him, and you get on well with him, and I think that's good. I would like Matt to participate a little more than he does, like JR, but I know that he's a busy guy, and he does an awful lot of reading, and he spends a lot of time writing some extremely detailed work that goes on his own site. It's only the more... sort of bite-sized stuff that MR gets, and for that, again, as always, I'm very, very grateful. It's very useful to have these pieces. He's very loyal. He puts up something about once a month, and they're always highly interesting
one of these interviews very shortly will be with him.
We'll be with Matt, yes. Well, he's an interesting guy. I'm no eugenicist. I don't have any agreement on that. It's one of those things that a lot of people have strong feelings about. I don't. And I suspect, anyway, that human nature is more generally abstruse and uncooperative.
How about...
But there we go.
Of course, only a few people are allowed to actually post on the blog. They have to be invited by you. But the issue is that once they've been invited, very reluctant to turn them away again. but how about this Fred Scrooby?
No, that's right.
I mean, has he ever offered to post or?
Fred, I would love Fred to post. I have no problems at all with any aspect of Fred. I think he comes up with ideas.
He's hilarious.
Absolutely terrific.
His posts are hilarious and scathing.
As far as I know, he's very funny. He's been around a long while, because before he was Fred Scrooby, he was another personality that was also quite well known. But he, for some reason,
you know, we should say that many of these characters you've heard of are operating deep under the cloak of pseudonymity of one kind or another, and that it would have been wise for all of us to do so if we had not been prevented from being anonymous by the actions of others.
No. We've already had this discussion.
No, it's a good thing.
I'll offer a public apology, apparently, for using your real name. But I've also explained to you.
As it turns out, I think it's important to be public for some of us. Yeah, of course.
James is public. And he has a very
James Bowery, who
we
will also be talking to very soon. And I would like to, I would like to interview everyone. It would be interesting to have the Pope on. I'd like to talk to him about his period in the Hitler Youth. Do you think the Pope would?
Yes, well, if we can engineer by some small miracle a complete change in our political system so that, in fact, individuals like us...
Then he would have to call us.
...instead of the bottom, you might be able to.
Right.
Yes, you might be able to whip a call out to the Vatican and get the response that you're looking for. But short of that, and it may need a miracle, and I'm afraid I'm not religious enough to believe in that kind of thing, the Pope might be a stride too far for you, even given your persuasive power.
Well, let's see. Why don't you wanted to talk today about nationalism in general and also your feelings about the nationalist movement in America and what's wrong with it?
Well, first of all, let's look at it generally, globally. We all know that the movement is highly plastic. It isn't the same in different areas of the world, and it isn't the same in countries within different areas. So when you look at Europe and you look at the experience of VB, you see them doing, as was Vlaams Belang now, you see them doing a fantastic job. They've got 32% in the...
And the BNP is doing fairly well, although...
I can't remember. BNP is coming up, but that'll take a long time. The FN is going to be tested.
Does Le Pen have a shot?
22nd, is it? The French presidential elections. He has a shot of getting into the second round, as he did last time, if he can defeat Sarkozy, and then we'll have the amazing choice that the right will have to make to support Ségolène Royal, the socialist, over the. The old Roué. I would love to see him do something astounding, but the bottom line is you have to say that Royal looks very good if he manages to beat Sarkozy and get into the second round. But other than that, I mean, if he doesn't figure and Sarkozy gets in, then the question is what's going to happen to his 20-25%. And it will not be able to go, in my opinion, to Royal. It will have to go to Sarkozy. So, in a way, he's the kingmaker.
Does that give you any power in France? In the United States, that position gives you no power at all. I mean, in our system, it doesn't give you political power the third party that makes the difference. But in a parliamentary system, it does.
No, but what did Michael Perretta get when he said, two presidential elections ago. That's nothing, wasn't it? 1%, 2% or something like that, or less, I don't know.
No, he didn't even make the news.
A couple of presidential elections ago. Right, he really bombed. But you've got 25% of people out there who are possible supporters of Le Pen. He got, I think, 22-ish the last time around. To get him into, to beat Jospin and get him into the second round. And the current situation is, I believe, that he's got at this point 2 or 3% higher on opinion polls than he had at an equivalent
point. But at some point you need to get
round.
Over 50%,
so
right?
He's quite well off.
To rule the country. Right.
At some point you need to win. You need to win, but we're not at the... I mean, let's be straightforward. We're not going to see Le Pen winning that.
Is his daughter, do you think, capable of filling his...
Yes, I think a lot depends on whether the older hands in the party decide that they're going to support her. Or whether there'll be some kind of split. I mean, there have been splits in the past, and they're very damaging. And if you look at what happened to Haider, absolute disaster. And he was in a position of genuine.
He was the Austrian.
At one point, threw it all
but
away.
But in America,
yeah. So I mean,
no nationalist candidate has won national office. In fact, there are no nationalist voices in the media at all.
There are none.
I mean,
no.
I think the biggest success politically was David Duke when he almost made it into the Senate. So what's wrong with American...
There's a lot of different problems.
I guess we're going to say white nationalism. I thought we were going to be crypto-white nationalists, but I guess that's out the window now. What's wrong with American white nationalism? Because I know...
Well, I think that you've got to look at it, again, always coming back to the absolute basic. There are perfectly good reasons why the Europeans have done a better job than we have.
Than the British have, or the Americans?
Social democracy and the British, yes, British and Americans. And, to my mind, it comes down to the willingness in continental Europe to take intellectuals seriously, which encourages intellectuals of all political stripes to actually do their work and to publish.
I am not an intellectual, but I play one on the internet.
Well, you do a pretty good job. I've always been fooled, and I expect there are one or two others. Looking at the kind of people who are currently in American WN, they don't even claim to be intellectuals. I mean, can you seriously name one WN activist who is a real intellectual or who has a real?
Yes, I think so, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to name
one. Well, okay, I can name one as well, but for reasons which we both understand, that individual...
No, he's making use of it. He's just not making use of it in the way that you would like.
Well, in a very, very... No. No, not in a... I mean, he's not leading the movement with it, and he's gone in some other...
But he's doing it on purpose. He has a theory. I don't know what it is, but he has a theory. Yes. He has a plan. He's doing what he's doing for a reason.
Yes, I accept that. It's entirely his business what he does. Nobody can.
Let me say this: as you know, guest worker, if I wasn't working with you, I think I'd probably be working with him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, others have left us and gone to him. That's a natural. I think you have alluded in the past in conversation with me about the I think it might have been Svi as well, who was a conversation with Svi that you were quoting about the tendency for people to become more
Svi's point was is that we don't need to be extreme at all in our message to the general public, because once people realize what the truth is, no matter how gently it is presented to them, they will then transition to an extreme position automatically and of their own accord. That was his point.
Well, let's just kick that around a bit. I was making the point a moment ago that intellectuals tend to be taken more seriously on continental Europe than they are in the English-speaking world, and that's undoubtedly the case. And when you look at the amount of new right intellectualizing that's gone
America corresponds to the European new right or the conservative revolution people.
Well, you got Occidental.
I'm not claiming that, say, Kevin MacDonald is lower than those people intellectually. I just mean they don't have a corresponding movement in the United States. That's all. I mean, from the scientific standpoint, I think perhaps some of the most important work is done in America and maybe Australia. From a scientific point of view.
That's for sure. I mean, there's nothing of great scientific interest that's coming.
Politically,
out of Europe, I suppose.
I find traditionalism/ conservative revolution/ European New Right stuff extremely interesting. And I wish we had some here.
Yes, it is.
I wish we had it here.
And the point is that it. But why don't you have it in the States? That's the interesting thing. In Britain, there's a very good reason why we haven't intellectualized, and it's because we already had a kind of response to Enlightenment ideas that was non-intellectual.
You mean like
Burke? Conservatism.
Burkean conservatism.
It was, yes, yes. And that didn't require an immense amount of continual redevelopment from an intellectual perspective. It didn't need it. In a way, the right of the political spectrum said, well, you know, this is an instinctual thing and we don't need to develop. And that's probably been the reason why down the years we haven't produced a great deal from the right in philosophical terms. In fact, conservatism, as understood in this country, is notoriously not a philosophy. America is another matter. I look at the American right and look at the religious influence in it, the puritanical religious influence in it, and I wonder whether that's got some feed into this situation, whether the faith answers the question that the lack of philosophy does in conservatism. But for whatever reason, America also has had no wish to follow a true philosophical path towards some kind of expression of American white American ethnic interests. And I think that's now turning out to be a great loss. It means that you've got to try to rarefy arguments purely on grounds of skin color or blood or something. And that's very difficult for the historical reasons that basically assimilation means anybody can be an American.
Propositional nationalism.
To find
yes.
a way forward.
Now, you wanted to keep the first show relatively short, is that correct? Yeah, so I think we'll just we'll leave it there. And can you do you have any final words to our listeners?
Well, I just repeat what I said before, which is that we've been blessed with a fantastic commentariat. I wouldn't say that when I set out on this path, I expected to find such an interesting group of people. And it's a great joy sometimes to sit down and look at the efforts they make, serious efforts they make to contribute. I personally have learnt a hell of a lot. I didn't go into this with all the answers, far from it. I've learnt a hell of a lot about what kind of problems we have and what people think about the solutions to them are. And I only hope that we've served some kind of purpose for everybody else. I'd also like to give thanks to all of the people who don't comment, who number many, many, many more, and who are also very important. When you have a really lively commentariat, it can be quite off-putting for somebody who doesn't want to come in and say, well, yeah, me too, brother. So to all those people also, thanks very much for coming along, and do stay with us, and we'll keep on trying.
I would like to say one last thing, which is that we haven't talked at all today about, you know, the sorts of things that I spend my time thinking about. But I would like to say that we will talk about them in the future, and
well, I will interview you, Søren, at some point. I will interview you, and you will have the opportunity to explain
that
everything.
As a civilization, as a nation, we are running out of time, and that terrible, terrible things are going to happen soon. I would just like to leave you with that optimistic message, and thank you very much for being on the first show, guest worker. Adieu.
Thank you very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Any man with energy and enthusiasm ought to be able to bring at least a dozen others round to his opinion in the course of a year, no matter how absurd that opinion might be. We see every day in politics, in business, in social life, masses of people brought to embrace the most revolutionary ideas, sometimes within a few days. It is all a question of getting hold of them in the right way and working on their weak points. Aleister Crowley.